Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Now, it's that time of the week where we do a bit of a roundup and analysis of the headlines coming from China.
The relationship between China and Australia has not been great this year. Chinese authorities have been targeting Australian products like wine and meat, but not iron ore, which is Australia's biggest export. So we'll find out why.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the headlines a few weeks back when Ant Group in China had to shelf their IPO plans, those have been in focus.
Yes, since European banks have been wary as well with Chinese tech giants who they fear might be their next big competitor.
Yeah, so the question is, what kind of competition can we expect from Chinese tech giants against European banks? Also, it looks like more Chinese companies might get banned by the United States. While we know that US President Donald Trump is on the way out, The question is, will China be able to reverse this list when the president-elect Joe Biden takes over?
To give us his analysis on those headlines and a lot more this morning, on the line with us is Dr. Oh Yee Sun, a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Good morning, doctor.
Well, good morning to all of you.
Dr. Oh, Australian exports of meat, timber, coal, cotton, barley, wine, seafood have been targeted by Chinese authorities this year as tensions have escalated, usually under the concocted guise of either pest infestation, for example, or administrative charges or trade rule breaches. But there is one commodity absent from Beijing's so-called hit list of Australian exports this time around, and we're talking about iron ore. Why is that?
Well, number one is, of course, China would need indeed a lot of iron ore in order to smelter into steel for its continued development needs. I mean, now we are talking about reviving the economy, not only Chinese economy, but perhaps also the world economy. So China would need a lot of these steel products in order to, for example, go on with its infrastructural development. So in a sense, well, Australia is one of the world's largest producer of iron ores. So China could not, in a sense, afford to not buy these iron ores. Whereas all these wines and milk products and meat and so on, China could always source from, for example, Brazil, Argentina, and many other producers. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dr. Oh, and very good morning to you, by the way. The recent G20 summit that was held over the weekend virtually, Chinese President Xi Jinping making headlines, proposing the use of this global QR code system. Do you think other countries will actually sign up?
Well, China is always, well, in recent years, ahead of the rest of the world in terms of adopting many of these really advanced technologies, such as nowadays all the e-wallets and so on. But I think the suggestion is it's a good one in terms of addressing all these pandemic concerns. But of course, especially the Europeans, I think they will have lots of concerns about protection of privacy and so on, because they feel that it's, well, indeed very important that data should be well guarded and so on. So until such issues are adequately addressed, I think at least the Europeans would be hesitating to adopt such a technology. And then for the developing countries, I think they will be happy to do so. But then to put the required information infrastructure in place, I think they would cost a lot of money, and many of them could not afford that.
Dr. Oh, China's Ant Group been dealt a setback, of course, with the shelving of its IPO. But European banks remain wary that Chinese tech giants may soon also be their main competitors. We, of course, know that the European finance sector has seen the emergence of large numbers of startups called fintech, which have sought to disrupt brick-and-mortar banks by offering digital services. So do you think China's tech giants pose a real risk for European banks? And what kind of risks are they perhaps anticipating?
Well, the stalling of Ant Group's listing on the Shanghai and Hong Kong stock exchanges would indicate that even the Chinese authorities, they are thinking twice about allowing such, shall we say, non-traditional financial service providers to go on the market in a big way, right? And that is because I think, you know, all these traditional financial institutions, banks and so on, they have very stringent prudential controls imposed on them. such as, for example, you need to put a certain, you need to keep a certain capital reserve and so on. Whereas for these new fintech companies, frankly speaking, whether they are Chinese or they are Europeans, they are indeed eating into the traditional markets of these banking giants, but they are usually not subject to as stringent of prudential controls as these banks. So I think not only European banks, even the Chinese banks are sort of wary about them here.
Dr. Oh, we are now getting news in that in Washington, the Trump administration is now saying that they are ready to start the transition process. This is very new news. But in the meantime, we know that that pressure on Chinese companies continues. We've now had Washington saying it's poised to designate four more Chinese companies as backed by the Chinese military. This according to sources, and that means curbing their access to U.S. investors as the Trump administration seeks to cement its hawkish China legacy in its waning days. Will China look at overturning these once President-elect Joe Biden takes over office on January 20th, which the pathway is now looking a lot clearer?
Well, I think the Chinese side would, of course, attempt very hard to try to overturn this sort of banning of doing business with these Chinese entities from the American perspective. But Joe Biden, I think, would at least take some time to consider all these reversal requests and so on, because it's a very clear, I think, bipartisan consensus in Capitol Hill, or namely the American legislature, to not go easy on a lot of these Chinese companies and products. So I think Joe Biden will have to first consolidate his domestic agenda before proceeding to consider all these China-related policies, perhaps 1 or 2 years down his presidency.
Dr. Oh, one last thing to get your thoughts on. Business leaders fear that Taiwan could lose its competitive edge after being left on the sidelines of the region's largest free trade bloc, the RCEP, which was formed by China and 14 other countries in the region. So if Taiwan were to try to join RCEP, just like Hong Kong is trying to do so, would China actually try to block Taiwan's intentions of being part of this regional group?
Well, of course, China will do its best to advance its so-called reunification agenda with Taiwan. So the only way that Taiwan could join RCEP, I think, would be sort of being subsumed under China's banner. And I think that would be unacceptable to the Taiwanese authorities, because it is unlike, for example, APEC. In order to join APEC, you don't have to be a sovereign nation. You just have to be a so-called economy or some sort of tariff zone or something like that. So that is acceptable to China because it doesn't impinge upon the question of sovereignty. But if Taiwan were to join in itself, I think it would be very difficult.
All right, Dr. Oh, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. Dr. Oh Yi Sun, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, joining us there.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.